The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
Welcome, everyone, to today's Smart Macro. We're going to be speaking with our Chief Investment Officer here at Financial Sense Wealth Management, Chris Poplava. So, Chris, when we spoke with you a couple weeks back, you had mentioned how we see seasonality, that is, the sell in May, go away, come back until Labor Day, that it is the most powerful when we see leading economic indicators turning down, which is what we're seeing now. However, when you look at the stock market, we just broke out of a trading range, it looks like, at least in the short term, at around 4,200 on the S&P 500. So even with the decline in leading economic indicators and a lot of the bearishness out there, it appears that there is quite a bit of positive sentiment flowing into the tech sector in particular. NVIDIA, Google, Microsoft, you name it, all up pretty strongly with a lot of the developments in artificial intelligence and generative AI. So given what we discussed, a couple of weeks back and the leading economic indicators in decline, has your view or assessment of the markets changed since?
Not at all, Chris. The LEIs are still pointing down. In fact, recently we just got the Conference Board's LEI for April, and that showed a year-over-year negative 8% decline. So a Conference Board reading of negative 8%, that has never, ever, ever been seen outside the context of a recession. And, I looked at going back to, I believe, 1960 or 50, and once you get past negative 1% annual, you've always ultimately entered into recession. So there's never been any kind of false moves below that that didn't lead to recession. So to me, that hasn't changed. There's a lot that hasn't changed. I think the concern, you look at the S&P, it's powering higher. The tech stocks look like they're doing well. Everything looks good. But, the question I have to keep asking myself, what has changed in terms of the outlook? Forget the stock market, because the stock market can change on a dime, which we saw today with a single comment from Yellen in terms of that we might need more bank mergers or Powell, meaning we may, still see some slight rate hikes. I mean, those are just a few words and the market reverses. So, you can't be swayed by the day-to-day news. You have to really think, okay, what are their underlying drivers of the economy that ultimately will drive metrics for the stock market in terms of corporate earnings and so forth and price multiples? And when I do that, Chris, everything to me suggests the economy will and still be slipping into recession. For example, I took a look recently at the Johnson Redbook same store sales. And, when we look at that year over year, that's around maybe about a 1.6%. And earlier last year, it was around 15% annual growth. So, 1.6% growth in same store sales without factoring in high, inflation. When you think about it, we're just paying for price. So the volume's contracting if same-store sales are up and they're not even growing as fast as inflation. So all this growth that we're seeing nominally, it's not real. It's inflation. And when we look at, for example, more discretionary spending like same-store sales for department stores, those are actually now negative. And again, that's not factoring in inflation. You factor in inflation, my guess is department same-store sales are probably down 5% year over year. We've heard bad news recently from Target, from Home Depot and other stores, other box stores, to suggest that the consumer is struggling here. Now, what is the catalyst to turn that around? I don't see it. We still see Federal Reserve with high interest rates. The Fed has not cut. The Fed is still shrinking its balance sheet. And the economy continues to slow. So, because corporations are being squeezed by falling profit margins, small businesses are being squeezed as well from high labor costs and flat traffic, flat stores, sales. But again, it's just nominal, not real or inflation adjusted. So that hasn't changed at all. And in fact, Chris, one of the things I took note of is that the consumers are very sensitive towards inflation. For example, when we had the CPI spike in 2008, when oil hit almost $150 a barrel, the Michigan Consumer Expectations Index plummeted. And even during the financial crisis of 2008-09, the Michigan Expectations Consumer Sentiment Expectations Index, it bottomed in the summer of 2008, and it had a very sharp rally going into the latter part of 2008, even while the stock market was going down, we were in a recession. And the main reason why we had a rebound was because inflation peaked, oil prices began to plummet. And we also saw a similar situation in 2011. We saw inflation begin to pick up, and we saw a huge drop off in the Michigan Consumer Expectations Index. And obviously, we know that inflation really began to pick up in 2021 and then peak in 2022. And when you graph the CPI and you look at the Michigan Consumer Expectations Index, they're polar opposites. So, you know, obviously, the higher inflation goes, the more expectations plummet. But the moment we saw a peak in inflation last year, in the summer of last year, that was the trough in Michigan Consumer Expectations Index. We saw a very sharp rally as inflation began to come down. However, the concern that I'm starting to see is if you look at the last few months, we have a divergence where inflation is continuing to moderate, but we've seen the Michigan Consumer Expectations Index plummet, I believe, something like 10 to 15 points. So that's not moving with inflation. So that tends to tell you they're seeing something other than inflation that is giving them concern. And to me, I think that's economic weakness ahead and a tight balance sheet for consumers and businesses.
Chris, this week we spoke with Variant Perceptions' Aaron Parham. They're out of the UK, about what their leading indicators are saying about the economic outlook, particularly for the US. And they said, you know, when you look at all the various leading economic indicators that they track, that there's a very high likelihood that the U.S. is actually in a recession right now. And of course, the market is just not getting the memo, with a lot of investor money chasing tech stocks higher currently. But they also have a number of near-term sell signals that were just triggered on the NASDAQ, surprisingly enough. We'll have to see how that plays out. But from your vantage point, where would you say that we are, given a number of the leading economic indicators, and obviously you track a number of different other recession probability models? What are you seeing on your end?
Like I said, Chris, you know, you look at that Conference Board LEI, negative 8%. I mean, that's pretty deep. I mean, you don't really see it at that level or lower. That's pretty rare. But it's, you know, not just the Conference Board. Even when you look at the Federal Reserve, for example, the New York Fed has its own recession model. The Cleveland Fed has their own recession model. And their model estimates the odds of recession within the next 12 months. And the readings that we are seeing from their models are north of 68%. Now, to give you an idea of 2020, when we were obviously in recession, they got up to about 40% chance. Even in the great financial crisis, the deepest recession we have had since the Great Depression, their odds only got to about 45% odds of a recession. And we're at 68. Yeah, I mean, we're higher than the 2000 recession. We're higher than the 1990 recession. You have to go all the way back to the early 80s, 80, 81 recessions to see recession odds this high. So when you just look at the range going back to 1960, you know, as low as it gets and as high as it gets in on a percentile basis, just to kind of give you an idea of the range, I would say we're probably around the 98th, 99th percentile of highest readings seen, you know, over the course of the last 60 years. So extremely elevated. I think you would kind of have to bury your head in the sand to not think the odds of recession are high. And, you know, further, Chris, you know, there's certain things that have occurred that to me are just going to put more pressure on this. And part of it is I think we are experiencing a credit crunch. We're seeing, as Jim Bianco says, a bank walk, where we're having consumers take deposits from banks and get a higher yield in money markets and T-bills and earn zero at their bank. So commercial banks are continuing to bleed deposits. But we're also, because of some of the recent bank failures, and again, this was a comment Janet Yellen made. She told bank CEOs that more mergers may be necessary. And you look at the Fed's senior loan officer survey, and looking at the percentage of loan officers willing to make consumer loans, that is at one of the lowest levels seen since 2020. And there's a very strong correlation between that as well as jobless claims. So it's arguing that we should see a pretty significant pickup in jobless claims, which if, when you look at the S&P versus jobless claims, they pretty much mirror each other. So if we see a pickup in jobless claims, it does portend a weaker stock market. And, you know, the other thing too, Chris, that really is important to bear in mind is the National Bureau of Economic Research. So they're the ones that are the arbiter for recession dating. And they typically notify you of the recession call a year after. So there's a huge delay. And the part of the reason for that is government economic data gets heavily revised. So they don't want to make a call then just to reverse that. So that's why they have such a long wait, is to see what the actual final data is after multiple revisions. And so while you may think that the economy is doing well, down the line, we may find out that actually the economy was not once we had the data revised. And this is something, Chris, that I've taken a look at recently, is looking at non-farm payrolls and their monthly change relative to the final release, which could come months later. And what you typically see is that in general, when the economy is expanding and we're adding jobs, the initial release turns out to be too low, that it was underestimating the amount of jobs that were being created. And then lastly, as the economy begins to roll over and the data gets revised, you find out that the non-farm payrolls were overestimating job growth. And one of the things I took a look at, Chris, was just the 12-month average coming from the initial release data and the final release data. And what I was noticing, for example, in the 2001 recession, which began in March, we started to see the gap between the final release and the initial release begin to close, to the point where in the first quarter of 2001, we were seeing that the final released values were lower than the initial, meaning that we were seeing the analyst or the economic estimates and the data that came in were overestimating the jobs, and we actually were losing jobs and just didn't know it. And that was the exact same case of what we saw going into the 2007-2009 recession, where throughout 2006, 2005, and even in the early part of 2007, after time, the job numbers that we got were revised higher. However, once we got the final data, that quickly changed in the fall of 2007, where the jobs data was revised lower, and it did not look back. For example, for all of 2008, every month, the numbers that we were reporting, the losses, were not big enough. The losses were actually larger than what we initially thought. And even in early 2009, as we were trying to dig ourselves out, we were still underestimating the job losses. And the reason why I bring this up is because when we look at 2022, we were grossly underestimating the jobs that were being created as people were going back to work and we're getting past the pandemic. However, that gap between the initial and the final release is quickly closing. In fact, Chris, in looking at the February data was the first time that we saw the 12-month moving average of the final release dip below the 12-month average of the initial release. And that continues to trend lower. So to me, these are all kind of the tipping points of, slipping in recession. Usually we kind of see these changes, anywhere from 1 to 3 months before. So in my opinion, I think we're quite close to slipping into recession, and it very well could start this summer. I know Anna Wan, Bloomberg's chief economist, she believes, I believe their models are pointing towards July. It's kind of being the start date of a recession. So the odds are there, and you just mentioned variant perception, thinks we're already in one. So, I think it's right now semantics, but the bigger point is not, has the recession already started, or is it next month or a couple of months from now? The point is it's coming, and we need to prepare our portfolios for that, to that reality, because right now, seeing a market rallying strongly in or leading into recession is not, to me, the right call.
So Chris, as you pointed out, leading economic indicators, including the Conference Board's LEI, which came out just this week, 13 consecutive monthly decline, and they are also forecasting a recession mid this year. So, we're just a month away from that. Variant perception also saying that we very likely could be in a recession right now. Anna Wong, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg, saying that their model is flashing 100% odds, as we spoke with her on FS Insider for around the July timeframe. And she expects also the job market to continue deteriorating throughout the second half. So there's a number of things that are all lining up for weakness, even though, again, tech stocks are rallying pretty strongly. That's different when you look under the hood. And that was something that Tom McClellan discussed earlier on our show in the first hour of our weekend show, in terms of looking at equal weighted indices where the broader market is not participating. It's really the level of concentration that we see among the tech stocks driving the indices higher. What are some of the other things that you're looking at under the hood that line up with this idea that we could be, at an important inflection point or turning point here?
Well, as highlighted earlier, retail sales do not look good, particularly when you adjust them for inflation. And they're actually the only thing in terms of the increase we're seeing really is inflation. If you looked at it on an inflation-adjusted basis, volumes are down. I think that was something even you and Anna Wong discussed when she was at a packaging conference, and they were talking about a noticeable decrease in packaging volume. So think of all the card boxes that we use or Amazon uses to ship boxes. So the number of volume of boxes being made was down considerably, which means the goods that went in those boxes, that are shipped in those boxes, are going down.
Yeah. And by the way, when I asked her off the air, what are they saying when she attended that conference among, like you said, you know, all these packagers and shippers based on their data, she had said the end of the world. Like basically they've never seen a drawdown in their data to this magnitude. So yeah, the packaging department, their data is definitely very, very poor, apparently right at the moment. The caveat to that though, importantly, is that there is a huge cutback now in goods, and then there's more spending going towards services. This is something that we've been aware of, but that appears to be, you know, the shift that's taking place. And I think there are going to be a lot of people taking vacations this summer, cruise vacations, that have put these things off. So that's kind of where the expectation is, that more of the spending is moving to and away from goods. So that would be how to put the packages data that we're seeing falling off a map into context.
That's a good point, Chris. Looking, you know, specifically at retail, and some of this retail are, you know, services, but mostly goods. But the spider retail, it's fairly equal weighted, broad based. I mean, you've got Carvana, GameStop, Amazon, Camping World, CarMax, O'Reilly, Dollar Tree, Walmart, Sprouts, AutoZone, TJ Maxx, Costco. So this is a really wide and diverse index. And when we look at what it's showing, it is less than 2% away from hitting its December low, which means giving back its entire gain for the year. That is considerable, and it looks very weak. And the December low is really not that far off the October low. So retail does not look good. And to give you a comparison, if the S&P were to fall all the way down to its December lows, that would represent a 10% decline in the market. Back then, the S&P was around 37 to 3800. So we're talking, you know, roughly 400 point drop in the S&P to get to its December lows. And the retail sector is only a stone's throw away from that. So, you know, again, Chris, these are huge concerns that I have when we look at the market, that it clearly says that all is not well.
And along those lines, you had sent a chart showing some sell signals on a wide range of the number of broad market indices. As I mentioned earlier, you know, Aaron Param at Variant Perception discussing this week how they just had some sell signals triggered on the NASDAQ. So, you know, I mean, that doesn't seem to be lining up with the price action, because the tech stocks are moving dramatically higher. But that being said, it looks like you have some sell signals as well that have been triggered more recently.
That's correct. I take a look at the Hindenburg Omen, and you can look up on the internet for in terms of its calculation. But essentially, the Hindenburg Omen looks for the market when it is going through an identity crisis, meaning it doesn't know if it's a bull or a bear. And you get that where you have a high number of new 52-week highs, as well as a high number of new 52-week lows. That's not a healthy market. And in general, that tends to portend weak returns going forward. So looking at some of the major indices, and again, I look at this indicator on indices, not the New York Stock Exchange, which can have some fixed income, mutual funds, and ETFs in there. But so this is only companies, which I feel has cleaner data. But we have a sell signal on the Russell 2000 Small Cap Index. And we also have them, Chris, for the S&P 500. And then also when I look at the NASDAQ itself also has a sell signal. So these are not good signs for the market, where it really is only, in my opinion, tech leading the market higher.
And tell you what, we'll include links to these charts where this interview is located on financialsense.com, so you can look at these sell signals and how they've lined up with prior tops in the past, whether or not that is for the Russell 2000, the S&P 500, or the NASDAQ, all of which, again, as Chris just said, we've seen sell signals just issued for each of these indices. And then you also have a chart, we'll post this as well, where you just look at the S&P 500 from the 2021 top till today, and there was a sell signal that was issued late 2021. I remember we talked about that on our show, and that in alignment with the other indices saying why we had turned bearish, along with the leading economic indicators turning down, which is part of our wider framework for how we manage money here at Financial Sense Wealth Management. But again, you can look at this zoomed in chart of the S&P 500. What are we seeing now? Because there's quite a cluster, even just over the past few weeks.
Right. So in Bloomberg has this indicator. We don't have to do all the calculation. When you get a signal, you get an orange circle. But when you get subsequent signals within a short window, it gives you red diamonds. So it just means that we're seeing this phenomenon of new highs and new lows at the same time on a consistent basis, not just kind of like a one-off, but day in and day out, we're seeing multiple clusters of this. And the last time we saw a bunch of clusters like this, we saw a bunch in the NASDAQ in late 21. We also saw a similar kind of cluster of readings and at the September 2018 peak before that mini bear market in the fourth quarter of 2018. So definitely not an encouraging sign, Chris. And something that I also did that to me really speaks to how unhealthy and lopsided this market is I took a look at major indices, and I wanted to look at the median member's year-to-date performance relative to its index. And I looked at the S&P 1500, so that's 1,500 stocks, so that's the S&P mid, small, and large cap index. I looked at the NASDAQ, the Russell 3000 with 3,000 stocks, the S&P 500, S&P 400, S&P 600, and the large cap S&P 100. And what I found, Chris, was across the board, the median member in that index was down. The median NASDAQ stock is down 3%. The NASDAQ is up 21%. That's a huge, huge change. And the other thing I did to really kind of bring this point home is looking at the median member's year-to-date performance less the index, to look at that spread of what the individual stocks are doing relative to the index. And you look at the S&P 1500, the median stock is underperforming the index by 9%. The NASDAQ median stock is underperforming by 23%. The Russell 3000 median stock is underperforming by 10%. S&P 500, the median stock is underperforming by 9%. And I can keep going, but the point is, this market is highly, highly selective. For example, you know, the S&P currently as of right now, the day you and I are speaking, is up 9.6% for the year. Now, that's a major index that most people follow. The other one is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you know, one of the longest indices followed. That is only up 1.3. The Dow is only up 1.3, and the S&P is up 9.6. That is huge, huge dispersion in terms of returns. And it really does highlight, when you look at it, the diversified market, it's not doing well. It's really large cap tech, where everyone's piling in to that area. And to me, Chris, this really looks and feels like late 2021 was, where the market became more and more selective. So one of two things need to happen. The large cap tech names need to pull the rest of the market with it, or they're going to get a pull down with the market. One of those two things is going to happen. And based on the economic data that I see and look at, I think it is the latter, where large cap tech stocks get pulled down with the market.
Yeah, I mean, when we just look at the wide range of leading economic indicators, recession models, all saying, you know, red flag here for the second half, or even perhaps imminently. And these are indicators that aggregate a wide range of various information, like obviously this Conference Board Leading Economic Index, as we've discussed many times. You know, it aggregates 10 different components, fundamental and financial data, to come up with its reading. So, I mean, this is broad-based data that we're looking at that is all pointing downwards for the economic outlook. And there's this temptation to just chase tech stocks higher as the market becomes more and more selective. I mean, as a money manager, I'm sure there's a lot of people even listening right now that are saying, well, you know, the tech stocks are moving up. And even though the fundamental data looks so bad, I'm underperforming if I don't chase Google or if I don't chase Meta or what have you. So, I mean, this is a very interesting and dicey environment right here.
I would agree, Chris. And for our firm, the hardest part is when you're underweight the market and you see it going up, and it's, you know, and the market can do that. And there is the risk of the fear of missing out, or FOMO, of underperforming your benchmark. But, you know, when you do that, Chris, you can do performance chasing where you're buying at tops, because of fear of missing out, and you sell at bottoms because of fear of further market losses just before the market rally. So, you know, all of these things to me, that's why you really got to step back and not, you know, look at day-to-day stock prices or movements in the market, but the bigger picture, what has changed? And when I do that, Chris, nothing. Nothing has changed. Financial liquidity is still being withdrawn by the Fed. The Fed is still shrinking its balance sheet. Interest rates remain elevated. The Fed has not cut interest rates. What you are seeing is the walk on commercial banks. That has not ended. They continue to pull money from banks, which means banks have to either liquidate their securities holdings to meet depositor outflow or use maturing loans to do that. But what it means is banks aren't lending. They need deposits to lend, to leverage. So, you know, that is basically the movie playing in reverse, not something you see during a strong economic expansion. So all of these catalysts, Chris, to me, they're just not there to turn this market around. You're still seeing economic data roll over. The one bright spot, in my opinion, Chris, is housing. You have seen a little bit of recovery in housing. But again, unless you see interest rates materially fall, I think this is just a near-term pop in housing. I don't think the trend is over, particularly if we, which I do believe is coming, start seeing job losses. You can't buy a home and you don't have a job. There's no way that banks are going to approve you for that. So this is why I think with the economic weakness ahead, that we'll see another renewed downturn in housing. So the only bright spot really I can see is technology stocks and the seasonal recovery we've had in housing. But absent that, I think both trends are going to revise lower.
We've been speaking with our Chief Investment Officer here at Financial Sense Wealth Management, Chris Poplava. If you'd like to get in touch with us to speak with us or any of our wealth advisors about how we can help you with our comprehensive financial planning services or asset management, you can do so by going to our website, financialsense.com, and hitting where it says Contact Us, or you can give us a call at 888-486-3939. Chris, thank you for coming on and giving us an update on your outlook, and we definitely look forward to speaking with you in another 2 weeks.
Thanks for having me on and look forward to it.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.